This message comes from NPR sponsor, Hulu. Based on shocking true events, the new Hulu original series, Under the Bridge, tells the story of a savage murder in a small town. Starring Riley Keough and Lily Gladstone, Under the Bridge is now streaming with new episodes Wednesdays, only on Hulu.
A great movie needs a great soundtrack. Sure, there are exceptions, but for decades, the music that goes along with a film has often had a life of its own, whether it's a collection of songs that already existed or a new concoction made just for the moment.
Soundtracks have become huge commercial hits. They've won awards. They've been mocked and re-released. We decided to debate what is the greatest movie soundtrack of all time. I'm Stephen Thompson.
And I'm Linda Holmes. And today we're offering our picks for the best ever movie soundtracks on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR.
Support for NPR and the following message come from FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Joining us from his home studio is Glenn Weldon of NPR's Culture Desk. Hi, Glenn.
Hey, Linda.
And also here is our pal Aisha Harris. Hey, Aisha.
Hey, Linda.
Hey. I want to just start by saying, in some ways, this is a ridiculous thing to do, right? Because
good start. Great start.
There are a lot of ways to approach the idea of the best soundtrack. We wanted to narrow the field a little bit, so we made a couple of rules. Primarily, we're not including movie soundtracks that are essentially simple translations of pre-existing stage musicals, even if one or two songs may have been added. So, for example, not The Music Man, not Grease, not My Fair Lady, things like that.
Not even Cats.
Not even.
No, not even Cats. Even when those movies produced good soundtrack albums that might stand up, you know, to the cast albums, we are allowing scores in part because, you know, a lot of soundtracks include some kind of more traditional song tracks and some scoring tracks. So that line isn't always bright. Plus, why not show love to scores? So with that said, we are going to just argue strenuously for our favorites and hopefully come to a conclusion in which we definitively determine the best soundtrack album of all time. Glenn Weldon, you seem like exactly the man to start us off.
Well, there is only one answer, and I've got it. So, yes, I am the perfect person to start this off.
We'll see about that.
My pick is iconic. It is literally anthemic. It is remarkably diverse in its form and approach. It can be stirring. It can be melancholy. It can be suspenseful. It can be joyous. It can be funny. But what it mostly is, in as much as it comes from me, is entirely predictable. Candace, hit me.
Yeah, buddy.
There we go. Now, I mean, that fanfare, that says, like, sit back, you are about to experience something mythic, something timeless, something epic. It stirs the blood, my blood anyway. But before I launch into my lengthy thesis defense, let's get some initial reactions to this pick and to the question that you raised earlier, Linda. Like, does it even belong in a discussion of soundtracks? Is this entirely a score?
Well, listen, there are two different things you can think about when you think about scores, right? One is a score that really, it exists as almost an integrated part of the movie, but it doesn't necessarily exist outside of the movie, right? So you would not hum it. Those kind of scores, I think, maybe are in a different category. But the score you've chosen here has a melody that everybody can hum. And if you take your big John Williams blockbuster scores, you get, you know, dun, 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 dun. You, like, that's a song in a way. So this one, I think, completely makes sense in this conversation.
Wait, have we said what the score is? Because I know I recognize it, but I'm feeling kind of, you know, ignorant here. Tell us.
Oh, Aisha, in a lot of ways, you and I are very different people. Superman the Movie, original soundtrack recording.
Oh, okay, yeah, I've never seen that movie. So that's why.
See my earlier point.
No shade. I've just never seen it.
To me, when we're talking about the greatest soundtracks of all time, the greatest soundtracks of all time, and we'll get to mine a little later, they can do a lot of different things. And I think what a great score does is checking too few boxes for me. I've got a whole list of what, to my mind, a great soundtrack could and should do. And look, John Williams, newsflash, great at what he does. To me, this is not the greatest soundtrack of all time.
Okay, good. Well, we'll get to your things of the boxes soundtracks need to check. They will be wrong because this particular soundtrack checks every one of them. I don't know what they are, but I know it does. Because A, it's here on the label, Superman the movie original soundtrack recording. B, how diverse this soundtrack is. I mean, let's start with the anthem. If we back up a little bit, the way it builds, it kind of dum-da-da-dum-da-dum. It's a very slow at first, but then it becomes driving and insistent. It's like this horse-drawn chariot that is barreling towards you. Then that big fanfare. And Aisha, if you see the film even once, I guarantee this, you will not be able to separate that opening anthem in your mind from the best opening titles in the history of cinema, because you got this big Webb telescope star field, right? This cosmos. And then these names just blaze across the screen in this big blue font. And then they swoop out over your head like, it all says, look, we are not kidding around. And by the way, when I was 10 and looking forward to this film for so much, this opening sequence and this music in particular just gripped me. And then years later, many years later, when I'd be a middle-aged gay nerd watching the 2006 film Superman Returns, what zooms across the screen is not like Marlon Brando. Whoosh, it's Parker Posey. Whoosh. And I remember thinking, that's the moment my life has been building to, this very moment. Now, this opening theme, I used to play this in my darkened bedroom.
On the accordion.
Well, actually what I did was I broke off an antenna from a walkie-talkie that I didn't use because I didn't have any friends, and I would use it as a baton. And I didn't know the first thing about conducting, did not have any discernible sense of rhythm. So what I was doing was whips on this baton around my room, but I would cue the drums, and I would cue the horns, and I would cue the strings, and this is what I mean. They are kind of completing a picture. They are completing the cinematic experience. When baby Kal-El's starship is kind of sailing through space toward Earth, and it's tumbling, we get flutes and piccolos going to make it sounds like it's kind of whistling through the void. When young Clark throws a crystal that causes the beams of the Fortress of Solitude to rise up out of the ocean. It's the strings that are going,
all these words that I'm like, I don't know what he's talking about here.
I was just going to say, spoiler.
Well, you will. You will. You can listen and you'll see Krypton. You will listen and you will see the wheat fields of Kansas waving in the breeze. You'll see Luther's lair. So perfect soundtrack, flawless, tens across the board, no notes. Now, I know what you're going to say. Even Glenn, if I accept your premise that this is the greatest movie soundtrack of all time, which I really should because you made a great case, is there not one track in particular that should disqualify this soundtrack from consideration completely? And I know the track you're talking about, and it's this one.
Can you read my mind? Do you know what it is that you do to me? I don't know who you are. Just a friend from another star.
Okay, all right.
That is very of that era.
Those are the words to the song, though.
That is the spoken word track, Can You Read My Mind, that goes over the flying sequence where Superman and Lois fly through the night sky over Metropolis. We don't need to go into the many ways in which it sucks, but that is the voice of Margot Kidder, of course, Lois Lane. And I don't want people to lay this on Margot Kidder. It's not her fault. She was tasked to read some pretty basic first draft song lyrics, very R. Kelly, I believe I can fly, I believe I can touch the sky, kind of song lyrics as if they were the Gettysburg Address. And she emotes them, which is a problem. Maureen McGovern did a version of this, and she sang those lyrics, and it just hits different.
Yeah.
But if you try to intone Wondering Why You Are, All the Wonderful Things You Are, and then you think to yourself, okay, you just rhymed you are with you are. Look, she did her best. Homegirl did her best.
Yes.
So given that, why do I still say this is the greatest movie soundtrack of all time? All that errant suckage only makes the excellence of everything around it excel even more. We cannot know great joy if we do not know great pain. In the brightest fields of heaven, Linda Holmes, there coils a single venomous snake. In the darkest pits of hell, there blooms a single golden flower. They exist to bring the other into sharper relief. So in conclusion, The existence of the hot mess that is Can You Read My Mind only distills the timeless brilliance of Superman, the movie original soundtrack recording. Thank you for your time. Do you validate parking?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I don't think that I agree with you.
No.
But I very much appreciated this visit into that corner of your brain. And it definitely made me want to watch the movie again.
There you go.
Skipping, as you know, I always do, the long Marlon Brando part at the beginning.
Myth-making. It's building.
So boring.
It's part of the deal.
Glenn's pick, Superman the movie, the original motion picture soundtrack. Aisha, you got to follow that.
Yeah. While pondering this subject and this challenge, I had to think about what I think makes a great movie soundtrack. And some of it is going to overlap with your arguments and your points and what Linda's already said. I think that it needs to be able to stand on its own, but also evoke the movie's themes. I want something that, like, when I'm listening to this album, it could be either I'm thinking about the movie, they bring back memories and scenes from the movie, or I could just be listening to this album and it's like, I don't think about it at all.
Right.
They tell their own story. Then on top of that, I want great songs that wouldn't exist if it weren't for the movie. Mm-hmm. So that automatically for me excluded something like Singing in the Rain, which I love that movie. The music's great, but some of those songs existed in other forms before. And in fact, in many ways, it's kind of a jukebox like compilation musical with added songs. And then on top of that, the music needs to all feel cohesive rather than a jumbled assemblage of various songs and points. And so this was a really hard challenge for me. I was like, well, you got to consider Shaft. You've got to consider Superfly. Mm-hmm. Saturday Night Fever, I think, is an excellent soundtrack, even if the movie is, that movie. and so I finally came down to a soundtrack that really captures a particular moment in time, but at the same time, it's universal to many people's experiences. It also captures this zeitgeist. It feels cohesive, and it has a very clear theme. And to me, that is why the Waiting to Exhale soundtrack is the best soundtrack of all time.
Nice.
So you've got Kenneth Babyface Edmonds.
You sure do.
Who wrote and produced every single track on the album. And he is able to channel some of the greatest Black female vocalists of all time. He is like Douglas Sirk. He's like Todd Haynes, or he's a man, but he's able to channel women's frustrations and anger, mm-hmm. put it into this great gumbo of just feeling from pain and friendship and camaraderie and love and deep, 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 deep love. Look at this lineup. We have legends like Aretha, Chaka Khan, Patti LaBelle singing songs, and then you've got current hit makers at the time in 1995, like Whitney Houston, of course, who starred in the movie, Toni Braxton, TLC, Mary J. Blige, Faith Evans, SWV, all of them at the top of their game. Oh, and you also have Brandy, who is like just coming up, wasn't quite the big star that she is now, like a little bit away from Moesha. It's just, to me, a perfect, perfect soundtrack. Now, one of my favorite songs on this album is by Mary J. Blige. I think it's one of her best songs of all time. It's called Not Gonna Cry. And in an interview that Babyface did years later with Billboard during one of the anniversaries of the soundtrack, this was his first time scoring and doing a soundtrack for a film. And he talked about how he wrote the songs first and he wrote them to the actual film itself. He says, the songs are directly written to film, and I tailored it to the artist that I thought it would suit best. So Mary J. Blige, we know who she is. We love her, but she's also had a lot of very public pain. She has not had the best luck with men. And so her analog in the Waiting to Exhale film is Angela Bassett's character, Bernadine, who has been devoted to her husband for 11 years. And then her husband leaves her for a white woman. And of course, we get this fantastic, amazing, vulnerable, iconic scene where she is taking all of her belongings and her husband's belongings while talking about how it's been, she's stayed with him for 11 years, you're gonna cheat on me, blah, blah, blah. And then she goes and lights the car on fire and it blows up in the background. There are direct quotes from the movie that are drawn into the lyrics of Mary J. Blige's song, which is, to me, just like, this is what you do when you make a soundtrack. You are making the song and the movie one. Let's just hear a little bit of Mary J. Blige doing her classic, I'm having trouble with men. She's great at this. This is what she does, and she channels Angela Bassett's character so well. I know there are no guarantees. In love, you take your chances. it's just, I love this so much. I think it deserves to be in the conversation. I think it is the best. And the album ends with a great duet between CeCe Winans and Whitney Houston. That's about friendship. So Waiting to Exhale, greatest soundtrack of all time.
It is a great contender.
However, Superman.
but I really pick up on your assertion that to qualify as the greatest soundtrack of all time, it must include some songs that were commissioned for or written for the film. Otherwise, what we're dealing with is simply music supervision, just exactly. Choosing pre-existing songs.
Which is an art in itself.
It's an art in and of itself, and not minimizing it.
Yeah.
But do you guys agree with that assertion?
100%.
And I want to point out, Aisha didn't even mention nominated for Album of the Year.
Yes.
Which, yeah. Not a little more than a handful, but not a whole lot of yeah. soundtracks have been nominated for Album of the Year, because there is a compilation album category mm-hmm. for film and television.
I think this is an outstanding pick, and I think it's a great record. One of the things that's really interesting about these picks and about my pick is where the movies themselves fall in the timeline of our lives. Glenn, you mentioned being 10 when Superman came out. Mm-hmm. Of course that soundtrack was going to imprint on you in a special way. Aisha, when Waiting to Exhale came out, how old were you?
I was 7.
7? Okay.
But my mom listened to the soundtrack for like a good year on end. So like I associated with that.
There you go.
Exactly. It is imprinted on your childhood. And my pick is imprinted on my childhood. I chose from the summer of 1984, the summer I turned 12, the soundtrack to the film Purple Rain. Look, this is a correct pick. I'm going to run through a bunch of criteria in a second. First, let's just hear a moment of When Doves Cry. Dig if you will the picture of you and I engaged in a kiss. The sweat of the body covers me. Can you, my darling? I wrote down a list of criteria for this category. It maps perfectly over the list of criteria for my pick. Wall-to-wall hits.
Yeah.
The
yeah.
songs set the tone for the movie and mirror the action in the movie. Cultural and commercial penetration. This was an extremely important album. This was nominated for Album of the Year. Lost to Can't Slow Down by Lionel Richie. critical acclaim, embraced by the critical establishment and by the public. Videos that allow the movie and its visuals to reverberate. That's very true in this case. This soundtrack is a standout in an era full of standout soundtracks. You know, soundtracks from the early to mid 80s, you've got your Footloose and Flashdance and Top Gun and these soundtracks that produced massive, massive, massive hits. And this was, I think, clearly the best one of those. So it is a standout in an era of standouts. Listening to this soundtrack today, it's amazing how much power and resonance it still has, coming from an era in which production is so dated. There are dated elements to this production. There's a lot of synthesizers on this album, but the force of the songs is completely and entirely undiminished. And one more footnote, you look at the soundtrack to this film, you look at the deluxe soundtrack to this film, it doesn't even have all of the amazing songs in this film. Two of my favorite songs of the 80s are Jungle Love and The Bird by The Time. And they're on The Time's album Ice Cream Castle that came out around the same time, but they're not even on this soundtrack. The movie is so stuffed with indelible music that they didn't even bother to fit it all into the deluxe soundtrack. You know, the film is a classic musical drama. It catapulted Prince from superstardom to super mega stardom. I love this record. I still listen to this record for pleasure, and I don't always necessarily get a chance to just go back and listen to old albums I like because of my job, but this is one where I do. It's certainly on the Mount Rushmore of great original soundtracks, along with films like The Graduate and Harold and Maude, and of course, the original soundtrack to Superman.
Sure, appreciate that.
Okay. Waiting to Exhale, erasure already.
No, I was mocking Glenn. I wasn't mocking you.
Oh, okay. All right. That's fine.
Yes. I was being gently mocked, so, you know.
Not so gently. This was my second pick, Stephen.
I mean, we haven't heard Linda's pick yet, but I have a feeling that a lot, if not most, of our listeners are probably going to concur with Stephen. And I can't blame them. This was up there for me, too, to choose.
Me, too.
Because it is fantastic, and you know, one of my criteria, it has to stand on its own. It is just one of the greatest albums of all time, period.
Yep.
Whether we're talking albums or soundtracks. So it still holds up.
To me, this is an inarguable pick in the sense that even if this isn't your number one, I mean, frankly, I think everything we've talked about so far is a perfectly good and valid number one pick. But like this one to me is like a super record in the sense that like, what would you ever say if somebody said like, I think this is the greatest soundtrack of all time? And you'd be like, no. All right. You want to hear mine?
Yes. Yeah. Very much so.
It is hard, as we've talked about, to decide what a great soundtrack even is. If you were going to decide like purely based on quality of song multiplied by number of songs, it would be very hard not to be impressed by something like the American Graffiti soundtrack, which is a double album of like just absolute bangers back to back from late 50s, early 60s. There are also some soundtrack albums, as we've talked about, that are landmark albums for a particular artist, right? Purple Rain is obviously like that. But Saturday Night Fever, which Aisha mentioned, is like that. As I think is the Black Panther soundtrack album that Kendrick Lamar did.
It's so good. I considered that one because I still listen to that regularly.
It'd be a very strong pick.
But ultimately, here's my thinking. I wanted to pick something that where the music is integral to the making and the success of a good movie. I wanted to pick something that was loved and embraced by the audience of the movie and then by at least some segment outside of that. I wanted to pick something that had original work in it, even if it wasn't the songs themselves, that it was the recordings. And I chose, purely based on personal preference, to favor something with a lot of different stuff in it, as opposed to one of those really genius albums from a particular artist, just because variety and the opportunity to hear a lot of different artists is one of the things I personally loved about soundtracks when I was first getting into listening to them. So, without further ado, play my song, Candace.
Where I was born and raised, the place where he was born and raised.
So that is, of course, not George Clooney. That is Dan Tominski singing for George Clooney on the soundtrack album of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the Coen Brothers album, another one of the few that has one album of the year. All the music in this was produced by T-Bone Burnett. They got together this really wonderful collection of artists. There are some archival recordings, but there's also some new stuff from, you know, people like Emmylou Harris and Alison Krauss's folks. And to me, a beautiful soundtrack to listen to. I mean, look, you've got roughly a 10-year gap between this and like Mumford & Sons kind of booming in the early 2010s. Yeah. But I do think there's an influence there of the growth of kind of the bluegrass stuff, the Americana stuff, even like the foot stomp rock of like the Avett Brothers and people like that. I think you can argue this was an influential record. I mean, it was a gigantic seller. It went Google Platinum or whatever. And it really kind of helped nudge along this arm of bluegrass and Americana, which of course is only one arm. So it's only a slice of kind of what bluegrass is and what Americana is, quote unquote Americana. But I do really love this record.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it's a great example of something that like is a great record, but also like there wouldn't really be a movie without music. The movie is partly about music and it's partly about the adventure of making music. And I also just find the scenes of these guys singing hilariously funny, even though, you know, for the most part, they are being dubbed by other people. Tim Blake Nelson has one that he actually sang himself. He sang, I believe, in the Jailhouse Now is him singing, but the rest of it is mostly dubbed. But these scenes of Clooney and John Turturro and Tim Blake Nelson, like leaning into this mic in the little studio with Stephen Root, those are really funny, energetic, great scenes. So I could have made a case for probably 15 different soundtracks as I dug more and more deeply into this. But ultimately, I went with Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the mega-selling, Grammy-winning soundtrack of my little guitar listening dreams.
I think this is a very, very strong pick and a really great album.
Yeah.
This album, among other things, changed the trajectories of some Hall of Fame careers. This reinvigorated interest in people like Ralph Stanley near the end of his life and career. This helped change the course of Alison Krauss's massively decorated career. I mean, this really was a phenomenon. And it was a phenomenon built around wonderful, truly timeless music.
Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing we haven't really hit on is something that this album speaks directly to, which is the ability for a soundtrack to be kind of a backdoor to discovery, to finding new artists. You know, and certainly Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, that was ubiquitous. It was on every CD rack of every house you'd visit in the early 2000s. You'd recognize the color and the font right away. But I just recently rewatched the 1986 Jonathan Demme film, Something Wild, because it has a great Ray Liotta performance. And that soundtrack features David Byrne and Celia Cruz, the first time I had heard Celia Cruz when I saw that as a kid. Oingo Boingo, New Order, UB40, Jimmy Cliff, Jerry Harrison. It's very much of its time, but it was a good time. And more recently, I am so grateful to the film Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse for exposing me to all kinds of artists that are now just a heavy rotation. And this is another thing that soundtracks can do.
Yeah. It's funny you mentioned that, Glenn, because I have the same experience with, like, the Babysitter's Club soundtrack, which exposed me to, for some reason, Escape is like on that album, which I think is wild. But then you also have like Matthew Sweet and like Letters to Cleo on there. Whenever I think of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, the soundtrack, I do think of the movie, but I also think of like Starbucks.
For sure.
Because it feels like when that soundtrack came out, it was always in Starbucks. Yeah, or it has that feel of like that sort of era where Starbucks was very much like indie.
Kind of the Nora Jones Death Cab for Cutie cusp.
Yes. It just feels of that era. And so I can't help but think of that as well, in addition to the film.
Absolutely. Look, you might almost think it's not possible to do a fully comprehensive list of beloved movie soundtracks. But we want to know what your favorite movie soundtracks are. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH and on Twitter at PCHH. That brings us to the end of our show. Stephen Thompson, Glenn Weldon, Aisha Harris, thanks to all of you for being here. It has been way too long.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to go watch Superman soon.
Yeah.
There you go. I'll watch Waiting to Exhale.
And one last thing before we go. We are going to be talking about The Wire, and we want to know your questions about the series. What should we talk about? Email us a voice memo with your question about The Wire to pchh@npr.org. Again, email us a voice memo with your question to pchh@npr.org. And of course, thank you for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. This episode was produced by Candace Lim and edited by Jessica Reedy. Thanks to both of them. And Hello Come In provides the music you're bobbing your head to right now. I am Linda Holmes, and we will see you all tomorrow.
On the It's Been a Minute podcast, we discuss a new documentary, Making Waves, as it looks at the patterns of abuse behind the scenes at Nickelodeon. But my guests say the problem extends throughout all of Hollywood.
In Hollywood, actor comes before child. We don't see these kids as real children.
Find out what makes child stars especially vulnerable on the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR. It's Been a Minute is a culture show you don't want to miss. Every week, we help you see the culture angle behind the headlines, the forces behind the trends, and the thinkers behind the next big thing. Tune in for the sharp cultural analysis and captivating interviews. Listen now to the It's Been a Minute podcast from NPR.
If you need a good laugh, tune into the next All Songs Considered from NPR Music as we play a mix of the funniest songs of all time with a little help from Weird Al Yankovic.
I had no idea laughter and joy was good for you. That's a revelation.
Listen to All Songs Considered every Tuesday wherever you get podcasts.